Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. The time is 9 a.m. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Stevens, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland, Chair. We have a quorum to conduct business. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we will continue discussing Senate Bill 111. And out of respect for people on the phone or people waiting standby on Teams, we're going to start with invited testimony, then try to finish the bill walkthrough. I welcome Senator Machicki to the meeting this morning. And first up is Dr. Dina Bishop, Superintendent for Alaska School Districts. Dr. Bishop, if you can hear me, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Dina Bishop, and I serve as the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I want to thank the committee for allowing me to testify today. I strongly believe that every child in the state of Alaska deserves the fundamental right to learn to read. It is the most important piece of legislation in my 31-year career, as this legislation holds school districts accountable across our state to the great mission that every Alaskan student reads well by third grade. Primarily, my testimony will focus on the reading components of this bill. And many of you know I have testified over the last few years to this body. Again, please know if we want to make a lasting impact to student learning in the state of Alaska, I believe a reading bill is critical. What this bill provides is for districts around our state, in conjunction with the Department of Education and Early Development, what I will refer to as DEED, we are now empowered to set a clear focus to guide implementation. This is the real work of reading improvement, high quality, evidence-based reading instruction matters for all students to be strong readers by that third grade goal. Clear legislation is necessary to provide explicit and systematic instruction in phonological awareness, phonics, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension strategies. Those are the big five referenced in the bill. It should happen in every primary classroom. And consequently, the reading wars are over a little bit. There used to be something called, and there still is, called balanced literacy, but Columbia University has asked its own professor, who's the designer of the program, to rethink and to provide that phonics and phonemic awareness are essential to reading. So that's a good thing for us reading teachers. Early literacy screening tools administered three times a year are critical to identifying students with potential reading difficulties and monitor towards proficiency. That's key in this bill, and I'm happy to see that. In fact, I might suggest revisiting legislation throughout the bill's existence with updated reports to check implementation fidelity and learning success in Alaska school districts, because I believe if we're doing this, we will see a difference. I appreciate the preschool funding continuing in this bill. For many Alaska's children, the early intervention in reading skills will support the outcome of reading by third grade. Evidence-based reading interventions are key. This would support having a plan for intervening for those students not yet reaching proficiency every year, which will not only keep their parents informed of the progress and partners in the work, but also may avoid any type of retention. The interventions do matter. Statewide teacher training on the science of reading is essential. This is not generally taught in our pre-service programs at university. This provision will drive high-quality training for our educators and truly support them in this work. Teaching all children to read really is hard work, and supporting teachers in our schools is essential. Additionally, I support DEED having the authority to guide high-quality evidence-based reading instruction. I'm happy to answer any questions as we move on, but I want to end with a story about the importance of reading for all. It's a book called Shadows on the Koyukuk, and it's an Alaska Native life's tale along a river. And his name was Sidney Huntington, a great, great Alaskan. He was a frontiersman. He loved to fish, hunt, and trap. He was also a successful businessman. He attended school prior to statehood in a BIA school and only went to third grade. However, in his book, he states the greatest gift he was ever given in his school, even though he never graduated, was the gift of a teacher teaching him to read. Because when he could read, the world opened up to him. And he is one of Alaska's great elders, great sportsmen, great statesmen, great Alaska Native leader. When he learned to read, life changed for him. And I leave you with that, that just like Sidney Huntington, every Alaskan child deserves the right to read by third grade. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? And seeing none, Dr. Bishop, thank you so much for your presentation this morning. And we're going to move on to the next one, which would be Dr. Burke. Dr. Burke, are you out there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Please state your name and affiliation, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony.
Okay. Good morning. I am Kimiana Burke. I am the Early Literacy Policy Director for the Foundation for Excellence in Education. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the opportunity to give testimony today. Now more than ever, it's time that we establish policies that support our students, especially in a time where learning loss is significant due to the pandemic. So strong policies like the one you are considering today lay the groundwork for equipping teachers, students, and parents with the proper tools and resources necessary to ensure that Alaska students are reading at grade level by the time they enter fourth grade. So my home state of Mississippi, some of you may know that I'm the former state literacy director for the Mississippi Department of Education and led our implementation of the Literacy-Based Promotion Act. We focused our attention on strong early literacy policies, and we have really had significant results in a short amount of time. It was really a comprehensive approach and a state-led effort. So in Mississippi, we focused on a few things and things that I have seen in this bill that you're considering. What are we doing for our teachers? Supporting our teachers through professional development in the science of reading, allowing literacy coaches or reading specialists to provide on-site dedicated support to improving and changing literacy instruction, and also adopting high-quality instructional materials, those materials that are aligned to the science of reading. So then we consider, what are we doing for our students? We're assessing where students are with universal screeners to ensure that our teachers are able to provide the instruction that is needed to fill the gaps and to address reading challenges and deficiencies, and then also creating those individual reading plans where teachers are able to indicate and to track the strategies that they've used and to determine whether those strategies are working, and if they're not, to then change course and implement new strategies and new interventions to address those deficiencies. And then lastly, what are we doing for our parents and families? We want to make sure that our parents are equipped with the resources that they need to support student learning at home and to let them know that this is a partnership and that we do need the parents in order to make sure that our students' journey is successful at school. So in the last decade, Mississippi has adopted these policies to support our work, including our first ever investment in pre-kindergarten. With our early learning collaboratives, and also, of course, our Literacy-Based Promotion Act. And we have also instituted a policy where our pre-service candidates who want to be licensed in elementary education have to pass an assessment of the science of reading in order to be licensed. So, as you know, early literacy isn't just an education issue. It's also an economic issue and can serve as an economic plus to your state. Students are less likely to drop out of high school if they have a strong foundation in reading, and this is information coming from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and are likely to go on to college and secure a successful career path. And so as you consider today's bill, think about how we can really change the lives of our students, our parents, and our teachers for the better, and to ensure that our students are set up for success early and that they have a strong start to improve the overall economic health of your state, and of course for education and for the prosperity of your state and the quality of life for your students. So thank you so much for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. A quick question for me. Are you familiar with the program that your neighbor to the east, Alabama, passed in 2019, and I think they started instituting it in 2020? And is it
yes.
Is it very similar to the one we're considering in front of this committee this year?
Yes, the Alabama Literacy Initiative. Their initiative actually includes dyslexia. Mississippi has a separate law for dyslexia, but their Alabama's package or their comprehensive bill is really one of the most comprehensive early literacy bills to date. But of course, Tennessee just passed theirs. But yeah, so all of these components that you are considering today are in Alabama's, Mississippi's, and of course, Tennessee's bill.
Thanks so much. I believe there's a question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Burke. It's good to have you back. And you broke your presentation into talking about what Mississippi did for students, or teachers, students, and then parents.
Yes.
And we do have some things in our bills right now to engage the parents in the K through third grade time period. Can you name any specific things? Did you have something formal where you offered resources and coached parents, or how did you do the parent part?
Okay, so part of our law indicated that we had to provide parents with what's called a parent read at home plan, and it just includes strategies in each of the components of reading that parents can do with their children at home for free. Those things such as ensuring that they are providing opportunities to talk with and to their children, opportunities to expand oral language, or even using Fruit Loops, the different colors of Fruit Loops to stand for sounds that they're doing when they're talking about, you know, sounding out or decoding words. So we created a parent read at home plan. Other states like South Carolina, I believe, has taken our plan and just taken the MBE cover off and added the South Carolina cover. And we've invited a lot of states to be able to do that if they prefer. So the parent read at home plan is one, a resource for parents. And then we also, as part of our individual reading plan that teachers begin for students who have been identified with a reading deficiency, parents are a part of that plan. And also, and I forgot to mention earlier, the parental notification piece. Parents can't assist when they don't know. That's something that I really believe in. I have a daughter as well, and so parents are notified immediately when their child's screener results come in and they're told that their child may have a reading deficiency. And then they're a part of the process. This is how you can help at home, and these are the things that we have and the resources that we have at the school that we're going to do to support your child, whether it's interventions or tutoring or those things. As part of our Early Learning Collaborative Act and our funding that matched from Kellogg, we provided trainings for districts to train parents. And we have a parent kit that includes some things, just some, you know, whether it's a whiteboard or whether it's our standards. We developed some guides, the parent guides, to ensure that they know the standards, but they're broken down into parent-friendly terms. So we use those funds to develop parent guides for families for math and reading kindergarten through eighth grade. And we provided kits to districts so that they can offer their own trainings to parents who are coming into their schools and to their districts so that they can have those resources.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. Senator Begich.
Dr. Burke, you mentioned early learning a couple times. Are you familiar? You testified a couple weeks ago on a bill that we had. Unlike that bill, this bill terminates the early learning with a sunset clause after a few years. Were you aware of that in this bill?
Yes, I've looked at that.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I want to maintain my role as my C3 role, and so I can't not lobby on things, but I will say this generally about early education. I believe on yesterday, Mississippi doubled down on its commitment to early childhood, providing more funding and expanding the number of seats that will be available to our four-year-olds. And so I believe that pre-K and that early childhood experience is a quality early childhood experience is extremely important to ensuring that students are ready and on that trajectory to be successful specifically by the end of third grade.
Follow up from Senator Begich.
Dr. Burke, I just reassure you that talking from the place of your professional experience in science in no way would ever risk your C3. There's nothing political about science and about the appropriate
way. No, there's education, not.
So I want to reassure you of that. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. You know, I've been on this job a year, and I try to make sure that I don't cross the line. So it's not you. My policy, my legislative people are watching. So I want to make sure that I'm in line with my role. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. Any other questions before the committee? Seeing none. Thank you, Dr. Burke, for your presentation. Thanks for offering it today.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Bishop, I'm just going to ask, can we go back to her really quick, Dr. Bishop? And Senator Begich brings up a good point. Or do you have any thoughts on the sunset for the sunset on the SB 111 for the pre-K portion of this?
That's a great question, Chair. And I am just confident, although, of course, I would like never to have to worry about funding, and we all would, whether it's in our personal lives or in organizations that we run. But I'm confident that what we have before us with our pre-K that we can start, that we will show evidence that will convince the investment in the state of Alaska to pre-K. So I don't fear it, because I certainly believe in what we can do, and if we are aligned and we have a cogent program, that we will see success in children, and it will bring additional investment, very similar to what the expert just shared.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Was that some crazy feedback? Sorry to put you on the spot like that, but I don't want people to get the wrong idea. My whole idea with the sunset, once again, I'll just state, is we're changing the foundation funding formula. We're increasing the education budget, and I think 10 years is a great period of time to look at this. And if it's decided we need more time, we could work on that in this version of the bill. But I fully anticipate that some future legislature We'll revisit this and fix it long before the sunset happens. But I do believe we need some fiscal sideboards on trying to ensure that we're making good use of our education funds. But thank you for adding that. Anything else from the committee?
Sure.
Senator Begich?
Thank you, Senator Holland, for the opportunity. Superintendent Bishop, since the question's been broached back to you, you know, my issue isn't about fear, it's about consistency in the message we send our parents. And so I want to talk to you about consistency a little bit here in terms of the legislation we provide. This bill has a number of provisions. It's been indicated in the past that the reason for the sunset clause was because we were experimenting with pre-K. And so because of that, we need to see the evidence. You just reinforced that question. So my first question maybe for you about that is, do you feel that the pre-K experience in the Anchorage School District for the last decade has been experimental, or do you think that you've actually shown results? Because in this committee, you've testified that your early education program has had results. So which is it? Is it experimental, or is it something that's working in the Anchorage School District?
Through the chair to Senator Begich, of course, it's solid, and evidence of that is that we have taken our own operational monies and expanded 16 additional pre-K classrooms on our own. even given the grant. And so pre-K is essential, and it works. And that leads me, I mean, I'm not trying to be contrary to anyone. I'm just saying that I believe in the evidence of evidence-based reading instruction, as well as early interventions as were at early as 3 and 4 year olds, that we can make this happen and ubiquitously across our state to get the investment. And so it's not a pilot here. We are assured of it, and we invest our own operational funds to educate 4 year olds.
Follow up, since
I would
like an opportunity to ask a follow up question.
Well, I just want to make you aware that we do have a lot to get accomplished today.
Yes, we do.
And part of that,
Mr. Chairman, is ensuring we have education policy that will work for the state.
Well, I don't doubt that Anchorage School District is making pre-K and early education working. My concern is that, once again, I will state that the paper that we put out of this committee, its execution in the field is going to be what determines whether pre-K works as SB 111 is going
to
push forward.
About something other than pre-K, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a provision in this bill that changes the age of entry into school from September 1st to June 1st. What is your impression of that? Is that an experimental thing? Is that something you've done before? Or is that something you think has efficacy in ensuring educational outcomes, Superintendent?
Through the chair to Senator Begich, I haven't really looked at the evidence or research around aid, but my experience is that, I've had more success as an elementary principal when the entry date was later than it was earlier.
And one follow up.
And that's from my experience as a principal in a school, but I have not really researched this area.
And my apologies for interrupting you previously, Senator Begich. I thought the last question was going to be a follow up. I didn't realize you had a different line of question you were working on. So this will be a follow-up on?
No, a last question, and this will be a last question without a follow-up.
Senator Begich.
The bill includes also language that Superintendent, I think I just lost you. There you are. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill includes language also later in, we haven't gotten to that section in terms of our review yet, but where it enacts in about 4 years' time, what takes the should clause from retention policy and makes it a must clause for retention policy. And I'm just curious, that's what's been referred to as hard retention. What is your position on hard retention? And by the way, neither of those two clauses, the prior clause on school age nor this retention clause, have sunset dates. Only the early education and the intensive reading intervention do. So what is your feeling about hard retention and its efficacy in ensuring that students graduate from the Anchorage School District?
Through the chair to Senator Begich, and I'm hoping that the feedback will be less. I unplugged a different camera. So, I actually, initially, when the bill was being drafted the year before last year and then last year, I'll share my personal experience. I spoke to superintendents and school leaders in most of those southern states that have this legislation. Primarily, I spent the most time in Florida with Dr. Barbara Jenkins, who is in Orlando with over 250,000 students. And interestingly, we had the conversation that the evidence based on retention is not solid, that there isn't a solid evidence of the retention. However, the interventions are key, and so keeping the interventions that they must happen is key in this legislation. Again, Florida does have a hard retention, and what she said about that is that we both know that educators do not like to retain students unless it's going to benefit them, which means that something differently is done or whether there's parental support. What was meaningful is preschool, getting kids in early, getting the early literacy done right, really teaching kids to read. Teachers do everything they can so that they do not retain students. And so while it was out there as a consequence, they did not see the mass retentions that their bill predicted through this in 4 or 5 years. And basically the prediction was that every student that wasn't reading on grade level would be then retained. And they used data from the given year that the bill was passed. It did not occur that way. Kids were not retained, yet their reading instruction went increased. Again, I'd like to say that the evidence on retention, that just keeping a child back in the same seat, that does not improve student learning. The key to retention or any kind of revision is in the interventions that you provide, the independent learning plans that were suggested also by the expert, that changes things. We teach to where how students learn. And so, again, I would just say that as an educator, knowing the will and the work of the educators and the teachers here in the Anchorage School District, that we would really rally around students, rally with their parents to enable the learning to happen. For those students that might be ELL or that might be have a learning disability, of course, the provisional waivers do work when retention is not appropriate. So again, just in my belief about the change that we can make in reading, I don't have fear with this, and that is really gaining that knowledge through the experts who are in states with hard reading retention. They just don't retain people because, or kids, because they are increasing the learning and the proficiency of students.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. And just another reminder to Senator Hughes, we're going to have to move on, but Senator Hughes.
And I'll just make a comment because I appreciate that, Dr. Bishop. And part of what a lot of folks are looking back is research that showed that it created a problem, but that research was not based on schools that had Read by Nine programs, and they were not based on schools that had this intensive intervention that you're talking about. So when we look back and refer to that, it's really not appropriate. And I'm so glad that you took the time to reach out to superintendents across the U.S., and I'm very grateful. And we are trying to call this, rather than retention, a hard retention, where I'm renaming it a strong promotion policy. And also, just for anyone listening and for you as well, this is the effective date of this is out 5 years, I believe, so that it wouldn't even go into effect until a student has had a chance to have all those interventions at kindergarten, first, second, third grade. So some of these other states put it in right away. We would delay it, so I don't think you would see an uptick. I would think that you would see students being successful and teachers having a real sense of reward for moving students up to the next grade level that are truly prepared. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Dr. Bishop, for humoring us. I believe right now we're ready to move on to Katie Ellsworth and Dee Dee Haynes. I believe they're on the phone. And I'm not sure if they are going to be in conjunction with each other, if they're going to do one first one, then the other. We'll probably start with Katie Ellsworth. Please, if y'all switch back and forth, please restate your name. But for certainly the first time, state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Katie Ellsworth. I'm with the Matsubara School District, the Executive Director of Federal Programs, and Dee Dee was unable to join us this morning, so it will just be me. I'm super thankful for this opportunity to speak up for the Senate Education Committee this morning, and so appreciative of the Senate Bill 111 and its focus on reading and early literacy for students. I would like to start talking a little, begin about early education and share with you the important role it has played here in the Matsubara School District. We have looked at studies for our students and see how they're performing, those who have attended our preschool versus those who did not attend one of our preschools. And as you know, there's a kindergarten developmental profile that students take when they enter kindergarten in the fall. And those students who attended our preschools outscored their peers who did not in all 13 areas of the kindergarten profile, and most notably in print awareness, knowledge of letters and symbols, followed by classifying, sorting objects, phonological awareness and number recognition. So we know that our preschool is getting the results that we want, and that is preparing students to enter kindergarten with a strong skill set. In this bill, it also notes that that it will be culturally responsive to local communities, which I think is key and important, and that it's accessible regardless of socioeconomic status, and that I feel is also key for an early education program. Another part of this bill that is we support is Parents as Teachers Program for Early Literacy. I appreciate all the depth that went into describing what that would look like, and we currently have one here that we call Read to Me Now to promote reading to students before they come to school and the impact that it can have. Also, our superintendent, Dr. Randy Traney, one of his mantras is we should want for all kids what we want for our own kids. And this bill really exemplifies that in that we want all kids to read well and on grade level by grade three. And that's what we want for our own kids, and that's what we want for all kids in our state. This has a very clear pathway, opposed to some other Senate bills that I've seen in the past, for students, for teachers to be really qualified in the area they're teaching, whether as a reading teacher or as an early in the early education program, and it provides multiple pathways for them to really develop their skills and being as the best educator they can be for that program. In addition, the Matsu Borough strongly supports having curricula for students that is evidence-based and incorporates those five components of phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension strategies. For many years now, for almost a decade, we have been working to build our own RTI or MTSS support system of support here, and so we know that reading assessment tools and progress monitoring are key when you're providing interventions and tracking progress of students, and fully support that, and that that it is a best practice, and it is a practice that should be done statewide for all students. Also, looking at providing reading opportunities for students outside the school day is key, and for those who are struggling or are reading deficient, and providing that timely, meaningful communication through progress reports to parents and keeping them actively involved in their students' education and aware of what level their student is functioning in is so key, and so glad to see that written into this bill. Near the end of the bill, it talks a little bit about the Virtual Education Consortium, and I just want to kind of give a little plug for that as well, as that's been a long time coming, and Alaska needs that to get quality education out to all students no matter where they live, and that really provides a way for that to happen. One of the areas that I would there's a couple of areas that I would like to talk about and for your consideration, and you mentioned it before, and that is the cutoff date for students to turn five to start kindergarten. I've spent 8 years teaching kindergarten. If I could tell you in the first few days of school without looking at the calendar who had July and August birthdays. They may be academically ready, but often socially struggled. And so looking at that and determining what that is, if we are going to move that back to June 1, I would really expect that preschool is available to all students. This would give them a learning platform earlier. They would be a little older going into kindergarten. There's a lot of advantages to that. The other item is which Senator Hughes just spoke of, was that retention at third grade. And in special education, we have what we call IEP teams for their individual educational plan. And this bill really talks about having that that reading improvement plan for students. I would hope and suggest that the decision of retention is made by a team, much like decisions are made in an IEP team, and that the final say for retention would not rest with the school board, but would rest with the superintendent or the superintendent's designee. I feel that the and our district and Dr. Traney feels that the decision, final decision on retention, if a parent has a concern about that, should rest with someone who is trained in education, and that would be the superintendent or their designee. And then I really appreciate the on page 27, line 23, it talks about adopting a policy for grade level progression, and just would like a little more guidance in that. Would that be expanded at a district's discretion, as long as it included the items that were discussed, such as students with disabilities, the four exemptions that are listed, that the ill students. So overall, the bill is something that we strongly support. As I said before, all kids in Alaska deserve to be able to read and read well by grade three, and this bill ensures that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ellsworth. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Ellsworth, you're aware that on page 7 and page 17, the Parents as Teachers program you spoke about and the language that is the only language in the bill relating to culturally responsive responses, which is in the pre-K policies. Neither of those are presently, both of those are terminated after a certain period of time in this bill. I've suggested that we include or maintain, and I think the chairman's open to the idea of maintaining the idea of the standards for pre-kindergarten being retained in the bill, being retained in law. But were you aware that they, at the present time, aren't retained? And then I have one final question after that.
In response to, much like Dr. Bishop, is that I feel like that once the state sees the benefits of pre-elementary, of preschool, and how that affects student achievement, that it will be wanting to be continued funding, if I understood your question correctly.
Did you want to restate your question, Senator Begich?
No, I think she got it. Okay. That's actually a perfect segue to the follow-up question, if you will, Mr. President.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that brings me to the issue of what works and what doesn't work. I asked Superintendent Bishop this question. There are three sections of this bill. Two are experimental that you haven't done. You testified that you have a working early education program. You have evidence that it works, just like Dr. Bishop had mentioned that, and as our own Department of Education has been doing for over a decade. So would you agree that pre-kindergarten or early education, that there is evidence in the Mat-Su Valley that your high-quality voluntary early education programming works? And sort of secondarily to that, you mentioned the connection of early education to the date change. That, in fact, with the evidence we've been provided in the committee, if you change the date of entry into school, the places which have been used as evidence, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Australia, all of those have really strong early education components. I want to commend you for that recognition of the relationship between the two. But would you say that early education is supported by the evidence in the Mat-Su School District for the last few years when you've been doing this, or would you say that it is experimental in the Mat-Su School District at this point?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Begich, I would say it is not experimental. We have been very explicit and purposeful about how we've implemented our preschool program here. All of our, we reviewed curricula, adopted curricula, and then all preschool teachers were trained. They received coaching, modeling, follow through, instructional tours on the implementation of the program. And we use an assessment tool both fall and spring to measure progress, and then they use the assessment tools within that program. So we have been very specific, and that is one of the beauties of this bill that has been written. It is very specific about support and having evidence-based programs in front of kids, and that is just key to excellent learning.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Begich. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, Dr. Ellsworth, thank you for your time. I believe we'll move on to Bob Griffin. Mr. Griffin, are you out there? Yes, please state your name.
Yeah, okay.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Yes, I'm Bob Griffin. I'm the Senior Education Research Fellow for the Alaska Policy Forum. And a lot of my comments today were similar to what I provided to the committee last year, but it's we have a few new committee members. Just make sure everybody hears me okay. I had a little bit of feedback there at the beginning.
We're hearing you loud. There might be a little bit of static in there, but I think I'm hearing you quite fine.
Okay. I just wanted to follow up and say I'm a big fan of this legislation. I wish, we've been working on this for many years, and hopefully we can push this across the finish line this time around. We need reading legislation for a lot of different reasons in Alaska, of course, for our dismal outcomes, but we really want it to be effective reading legislation. And my role here today is I was going to cover the top 10 myths that I've recognized since I've been working on the legislation since 2014 that have been brought up. And hopefully you have the packages there with the PDFs that show the graphs and charts that I'll be talking to today. But the first myth is that all research indicates that students should always be socially promoted, even if they're far below proficiency in third grade reading. And this aligns with a lot of the thinking that's been published by Dr. Linda Darling-Hammond from Stanford University and many other places. And on that, I agree for the most part, with the exception of early childhood illiteracy, to meet that cognitive window of between 9 and 10 years old when kids really are eager and able to learn. If we miss that, then that gets to be a problem. The contention that there's no research showing that retention or requiring kids to be proficient for promotion included 15 studies that show to the contrary there, so I won't belabor that point much longer. The second myth is that we don't need a minimum standard for third grade promotion because Alaskan reading scores are above average in our urban communities. It's the rural communities that drag our test scores down. But if you see the chart there that have the PEAKS test data, actually our urban schools are about average or a little bit above average, and our rural schools are actually maintaining our PEAKS test scores in English and language arts. So it's not an urban rural thing at all. The next myth that comes up frequently is in poverty, and that poverty is the key contributor to us being dead last in fourth grade reading NAEP test scores. But in actuality, as the bar chart that I've included will show, that Alaska is one of the lower poverty rate states in the United States. Myth number four that has come up in the media last year, and I talked about it a little bit last year too, is that ethnic minorities are primarily responsible for our low NAEP test scores, and that white Alaskan students score above average. This is a pretty offensive narrative that was been bounced around a lot, but when we really dig deep into it, if you can see in the figure four bar chart that I've included in there, NAEP test scores for fourth graders for upper and middle income kids who don't qualify for free reduced lunch that happen to be white, are, when we compare those against the kids in other places, we're second to last, only ahead of West Virginia in the United States, running about a 1.5 years in achievement level behind that same demographic in other states. Myth five that I'd like to discuss is our low test scores are because of our unusually high ethnic and linguistic diversity, and they contribute to our low test scores. But there's a 2015 study that was done by a UAA professor that came out that's much quoted on this subject, talking about Anchorage being one of the most diverse cities in the United States. But there's a 2021 collaborative investigation done by five different PhDs that came to a little bit different conclusion that Anchorage was 126th ranking in the United States in ethnic diversity and 182nd in linguistic diversity. And just for our edification, I included the pie charts from the 2015 UAA study on the right-hand side that shows that the percentage of ethnic minorities in Anchorage during with the 2010 2010 census data was within about 1.2% of the national average. Moving on, myth six that we don't need the fourth grade reading. Our fourth grade reading NAEP scores are above average because we have above average growth between fourth and eighth grade. We do have above average growth between fourth and eighth grade scores, but as you see in the chart that I've included there, we're still doing very poorly in both math and reading by the time eighth grade rolls around. And the color codes are red are scores that are in the bottom five. In green, when you look at the Florida side, green is in the top five. And the difference between Florida and Alaska, and Florida has been the leader on this, and most of the successful programs have been modeled after Florida. Florida has increased in every category, passing Alaska in eighth grade math, and Alaska has declined in every category since 2003. Really quickly, myth seven, high quality pre-K improves test scores more than comprehensive reading policies that we've talked about again last year, that Florida was number one in low-income fourth grade NAEP test scores before the first cohort of the pre-K students ever tested in Florida. So whether, and it will be up for debate whether it contributes to better outcomes, but it didn't. It wasn't the factor that brought them to number one in the country in low-income fourth grade reading. And it's also an interesting fact that when we compared the pre-K in Alabama was ranked at the highest quality pre-K for many years, their fourth grade net scores are very similar to Alaska. Really quickly, number eight, third grade Florida promotion-based third grade reading model saw their scores didn't see their scores increase between fourth and eighth grade. And again, the chart shows that, early childhood literacy improvements helped Florida in every category across the way. Probably one of the most important points here, myth number nine, is that comprehensive reading policies that socially promote very weak readers, if we emulate the states that have done that, that fourth graders in Alaska can still, get higher NAEP test scores along the national average in a few years. But in this bar chart that I've included in here, it breaks out the states that use performance-based promotion, which has been referred today as hard retention, and social promotion states, many of those states that have comprehensive reading policies with a double asterisk of across the country, that the growth in NAEP test scores is about 14 times higher for the student, for the states that have performance-based promotion requirements. If Alaska was to adopt a reading policy that didn't include performance-based promotion, it would. All indications are that the growth would be much less than the states that use the promotion-based the proficiency-based promotion. And finally, myth 10 goes into the spending that K-12 spending between 2003-2018, Alaska was the third highest in the country. Yet the programs that we've in yellow, you can see the programs that we're trying to model after of Mississippi and Florida have only raised their K-12 spending just slightly above the national average. And by reprioritizing essentially programs, they recognized that early childhood literacy was one of the most important things to contribute. So really, that's all I have is, and I, as I say it every time that I present, that our kids are just as bright, our education professionals are just as dedicated, and our parents love their kids just as much as anywhere else. We're not dead last in reading for any of those factors. It has to do with our policies, and there are policies out there to emulate, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Mr. Griffin, that may be all you have, but that was certainly drinking from a fire hose. I appreciate the information. We'll be going over this, I'm sure, a lot in the future. Any questions for Mr. Griffin before we move on? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you, Bob. A couple quick questions for you. You're, of course, fully aware that Florida has its pre-kindergarten program with over 80% attendance, and it's in the BSA, the base student allocation, right? Do you understand that?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, I do. And just to anticipate your maybe a follow-up question there, yes, I would be hard-pressed to change anything in the approach that Florida has, and I would acknowledge that their pre-K program probably does help them maintain that number one status in early childhood reading in the United States.
Just the other question is, the last year that we had reports on the retention program for Florida, roughly 20% of the third graders faced possible retention based on the results from the Department of Education in Florida. Now, that was for 2019 because 2020, of course, was a year that was different for all states, but they indicated level the third grader must score at level two or higher in their programming, as I recall. And those who scored under it, which were level one, I believe, those were nearly 20% of the Florida third graders were facing that possible retention. Now, when you take in the exceptions, many of which are repeated in both SB 8, frankly, in all three bills, SB 8, SB 42, and SB 111, you have to at least give some pause, don't you? I mean, when you think about a number of one-fifth of the students, and I believe that you're going to have a positive answer to that, and I want to hear that positive answer, but that's a lot of kids, and there's some potential cost related to that down the line.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, it's an excellent question. Yes, I think that through the process, there's a large percentage of the kids who reading deficiencies are identified early on in Florida, but I think the actual number of kids that are actually retained, and I don't have the exact figures in front of me, is actually quite small, and the difference in the change of the policy the retention policy and post-retention policy was not a large increase. It actually got dramatically smaller at the end, because it's one of those things that makes people sit up and pay attention to the policy. Nobody likes to see a 9-year-old have to repeat third grade, and we're not endorsing that. We would any retention would include an intervention year that would be much different than they experienced the year before. But also, no one likes to see a 15-year-old who's illiterate, who's been socially promoted along the way, and the damage to the self-esteem of that person that happens as well. So, yes, I acknowledge that retention and reading much of the literature from Professor Hammond from Stanford, I agree that retention is something we want to avoid. But in this particular case, as long as we have the strong interventions in effect, I think it is the key component, and the evidence of the states that have tried another path show that it's the key component to making the policy work.
Follow up on Florida,
Senator Begich.
And what impact? There's a $500 per student in the Just Read Florida element of the Florida bill. That's provided. It's this stipend provided to the students that are scoring, you know, in that level one category to help improve the reading. What impact does that extra money being provided to the student have, do you think, on this on the effort to reduce? You're a popular man, Bob.
I'm sorry. Yeah, apologize for that.
No.
I think it probably has a positive impact. I don't have the data in front of me, and I'll repeat again. I would hesitate any policies that varied significantly from the things that have been very successful in Florida and in Mississippi, especially without expending a lot of resources. They've produced some amazing results. Again, to the extent where the kids in Miami-Dade, Florida, have higher reading scores or statistically indistinguishable reading scores from upper middle-income white kids in Alaska. So, yes, I would say that probably contributes. I don't have data to prove that. And, again, I wouldn't vary from the Florida model very much because they've been proven to have success.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. We have a question from Senator Hughes.
And I'll try to make it quick because I know you have a lot of material. So that 20% in Florida, I'm assuming that included disabled students, English second language students, which I think Florida has a large number of. And so I just want to keep folks in mind and that in mind, also the fact the delayed effective date that we discussed later. But Mr. Griffin, first of all, thank you very much, because busting the myth regarding the promotion is pretty significant. And I am a firm believer that with the intervention, it would be really rare, especially if we post-date it like we're doing in this bill, so that the schools and the teachers get trained up and they're doing a good job. I just don't think it's going to be a problem. So I appreciate you bringing that forward and also the research that is beginning to show the other side. I'm wondering, does Florida have a way, if they're not ready to be promoted and the extra intervention takes place, do they have a way to catch that child up to their cohort? Because that's one of the things we'd like to see happen here. If a child is not promoted, that they'd have an opportunity to catch up.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, my understanding is, yes, there is that provision in the Florida statute to allow kids to rejoin their cohort if they're retained. And as a promise, I will follow up to the committee and provide information on the actual retention stats for Florida, because I'm pretty certain they're far below 20%, the actual, though many kids face the threat of retention, the number of kids who are actually retained, I think, is far below the 20% level.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Thank
just
you for
clarification on the point that was made.
Say again?
Yes. It excluded those that qualified for one of the six exemptions. And so it was, but Mr. Griffin's right that it doesn't mean that 20% were held back, and that's not the implication. But that 20% number excludes those who qualified for the exemption, since they're not required to test for level one, level two, or level three. And so I'd be very interested in seeing the numbers of the actual number that were retained.
Thanks again, Mr. Griffin. Now we will move on to our last invited testimony today, Mark Lackey. Mr. Lackey, are you there? Please.
I am.
Please state your name and affiliation, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good morning, committee. My name is Mark Lackey. I am the executive director of CCS Early Learning. We are one of the 17 Head Start grantees that are located around the state. And today I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Head Start Association, which includes all 17 of those grantees. So just to begin with, excited to see Alaska considering additional pre-K, excited to see legislation around reading. We have long thought that those two things are very, very important for our state. Alaska has been kind of behind the game in pre-K for many years, and so we're excited to see this discussion happening and occurring, and very supportive. My testimony today is about making sure that as we roll this out, that we do so in a coordinated way, in a collaborative way, and we don't have any unintended consequences. And so the one issue that we've brought forward is how state funding can have a negative impact on federal funding. And so I've provided two documents to the committee, I believe. One is just a graph that shows all of the federal funding that comes into the state. It's a chart with blue and orange lines on it. And so if you look at that chart, you can see that in federal fiscal year 20, that blue line is $57.9 million came into those 17 grantees to provide early childhood services across the state. That's base operational funding. And you can also see that those blue lines from federal year 8 all the way to 20 have been on the uptick. So a lot of federal money has been coming into our state to provide Head Start and early Head Start services. That money goes directly to the local grantee. So my grantee, one of 17 here in the MATSU, I'm writing those federal grants. The feds are funding those services, and I'm providing services here in the MATSU. In addition, on that chart, you'll see that grantees are pretty successful lately in pulling down one-time federal funding. So in FY19, you can see that we brought in $29 million of federal funding that largely went to build facilities. So I think the major expenditures there was a new facility on the Kenai, a new facility in Anchorage. Nome, I believe, was another facility, and Tlingit and Haida. And so that's one-time federal funding that comes to these grantees as well, primarily for facilities. So that's just the size and scope of federal investment in pre-K. The concern that we have that we wanted just to make sure the committee was aware of is on the other document that I provided to you, which is entitled Head Start Regulations. So there is the federal government in Head Start Regulations requires that we are fully enrolled, and they should. They want to make sure that federal taxpayer dollars are being used. Should I stop? I saw a hand up.
No, I'm sorry. Please resume. It's a signal to a staff.
Oh, okay. So federal taxpayer dollars they require that we be fully enrolled at all times. And so that first piece of statute that I put there is that if programs are chronically under-enrolled, the Office of Head Start, the Secretary, has the authority to withdraw or withhold that funding. And so that can be an issue. And actually, this is an issue that we have experienced in Alaska. So we've had this $2 million of state pre-K funding, you know, for many, many years. And we've seen instances where, you know, a program, especially in really small communities, and there's only, you know, 20 eligible children in town, where a school district would open up a pre-K program using the state pre-K funding, where a Head Start program was already in existence, and all of a sudden half the kids were in pre-K, half the kids were in Head Start, and those programs become chronically under-enrolled. And so, you know, that's just been something that Head Start grantees have had to deal with using existing pre-K funding. And we're really hopeful that as Alaska starts to really consider increasing investment in pre-K, that we, from the outset, we avoid those sort of conflicts. And that I think everybody wants more children to be served, not for less federal funding to come into the state or for there to be competition over, you know, children. We want additional children to be served and ready for school. So the second regulation that's on that second page of that regulation document just lays out the requirement that we have as federal grantees to make sure that as we write our federal grants, we're demonstrating that there's a need within the community, that we're looking at what existing child care services are in that community, and we're looking at, is there state pre-K funding already there? What sort of services are available in that community so that we, as federal grantees, are not duplicating services or causing a situation where there'll be competition over those limited kids? And so we're suggesting that that's something the state of Alaska should strongly consider as well. Again, I think we're very, very excited about, we cannot serve all children in the state of Alaska. You know, our focus is on low income, it's on kids in foster care, and it's kids that are homeless. There's just no way we can do that. But we're hopeful that the committee can consider some sort of criteria on where the state funding goes. I'd be happy to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Lackey. First, Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to hear your voice, Mark. Do you,
yes.
If you were in a community where a district wanted to have a pre-K program that met the standards that are required in this bill, do you have the flexibility as a Head Start federal program to meet the requirements that the state would be requiring? Because I would imagine if you were to do that, the district would be happy to have you be that pre-K program. But right now, my understanding is you don't have to follow the state requirements. But would you have the flexibility so that you could, and then you would probably, the Head Start program would probably be what the district would choose to use? And then could you also, I know you get some state funding, so it looks like you've gotten close to $60 million in 12 years. Are you getting, it was almost a half a billion in 12 years and $60 million in 1 year. So I understand you receive about $6 million in state funding right now for the state match. But my question is, do you have the flexibility that you could meet these higher pre-K standards of making sure these children are learning some of these components to prepare them then for the early literacy that would begin intensely in kindergarten?
So a couple things. Just to clarify on funding numbers, the graph that I gave you is statewide funding. So that is not specific just to my program. Our federal grants are around 5.8 of that 60 that come to CCS.
Yes.
And you're correct. Yeah, the 6.8 is statewide as well. So, yes, every Head Start program is locally administered. And so every Head Start program is governed by a board of parents and also a board of directors. And Head Start regulations give every grantee the flexibility to operate that program however those governing bodies and those parents see best fit. When comparing, whatever regulations pre-K ends up having, Head Start we have existing statutes that are just mind-boggling on the regulations that we have to provide as far as independently looking at every single child, where they're at in their learning, looking at their ongoing development, you know, whether that's in letter recognition or phonetics, whatever it is, we measure that over time. So the short answer is every single program is responsible to their local community, to their parents, to their board of directors, and to the federal government. The State Department of Education right now is collecting they have all of that data on our pre-K programs. We observe children over time. It's not a sit-down test. We make a note when a child knows 10 letters of the alphabet, and we make a note when they know 13 letters of the alphabet, and that's an ongoing assessment over the course of the school years.
Senator Hughes.
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, every local program could choose to follow what we're going to prescribe for pre-K if they so chose, and that would perhaps help ensure that they wouldn't not meet their enrollment numbers by the district starting up another program. That's what I'm hearing. Yes, the local program could.
Yes, but I think the short answer is that, yes, grantees can provide the program that their local community wants and expects. The challenge we have is that if there's no requirement that the state look at what's already being provided in that service, if there's no stability of funding, those federal funds could be at risk. So if a state puts in, a district puts in an application, they start up a pre-K fund program. If they're not in good communication or collaboration with their Head Start program in their community, those federal funds could be at risk. And so we're asking districts to have the same sort of look at services already in existence as Head Start programs do.
Last follow-up.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but you know, with the amount of money that's going into this, so Mark, I believe, and just this can be yes or no, but the local Head Start program could approach the district and say, we will be your pre-K program. We will meet all these state requirements if they so choose. Yes or no?
Are you referring to using state funding or using federal funding? I'm not familiar enough with SB 11 to know.
Okay.
Yes, I don't believe he could answer that question from a legal standpoint. Thank you, Mr. Mackey. We have a question from Senator Begich.
Just clarification. You mentioned you just mentioned you're not familiar with the bill. On page 17, it defines the qualities that Senator Hughes was referring to, and so I'd call your attention to those qualities. But I mean, you used the phrase child care to describe early education. Would you? And so I was going to ask you if you had reviewed what 17 says, because it's certainly not child care, and that's something that's very different. But in SB 8 and 42, there was a provision requiring coordination, and I believe it's in this bill as well, but I honestly can't remember where it is. It's a simple paragraph that requires local coordination before establishing programs. So that was in SB 8, and if it's not in this bill, I'm certain we would want to put it in this bill because it does, in fact, require that input, but I believe it's in this bill. I'm not finding it right now, Mark. So your concern there is one that's been brought up repeatedly when early education bills have been brought up, and it is one that I think we all adhere to. But our concern is ensuring that the quality early education meet really good standards that Senator Hughes has been very, very clear at pointing out here. And so the question she was asking is simply, would you be able to bring yourselves to the standard of this bill and consequently fully participate in early education programming for Alaska? I think it's a reasonable question to ask.
I would just repeat that I don't, and I will ask, give him the opportunity to answer himself. I think he's concerned about making the legal commitment to being able to participate in this program. But Mr. Mackey, I'll let you speak for yourself. Pardon, Mr. Lackey, I'll let you speak for yourself.
That's all right. Through the chair, Senator Begich, in looking at page 17, the things that are outlined there in A through D, I guess the first thing that catches my mind there is evidence-based program that meets federal standards for early education programs. So I would be really curious to know what the federal standards for early education programs refer to. My suspicion would be that would be the federal regulations for Head Start. Those would be our regulations, would be my suspicion, but I don't know that. But I'm very confident in the quality of our programs, in the individualization of our programs, and I feel like we would meet or exceed quality levels that are being proposed here in pre-K.
And Senator Begich has a very tiny follow-up.
And so just to reinforce, I really appreciate that answer. Reinforces that we're not talking about a competition of resources. We're talking about improving education for kids. And I know that that's the intent of the chair, and I know that's the intent of Senator Hughes. And so it's to us, it's about reaching that standard. And so I appreciate your comments. Thank you, Mark.
Mr. Lackey, so you said there's 17 program grantees, correct?
That is correct.
How many programs does that run in the state of Alaska?
So those 17 grantees are located in over 100 communities throughout the state. And so we can provide that list of grantees if you'd like it, and also a list of communities. But as an example, Cowarick is one of those grantees. They're in 11 communities kind of throughout the Nome region. RuralCap kind of fills in the gaps all over the state. They serve 24 different communities. My grantee serves Wasilla, Palmer, Meadow Lakes, Chugiak, Eagle River. So all those different communities are served, over 100 across the state by those 17 grantees.
And can you provide the number of just how many children are in the federal Head Start program in Alaska?
I can, yes. Yes, so it's approximately 4,000 cumulative a year. Now, COVID year is not a normal year, but around 4,000 children cumulatively, when we take into account children that are coming and going, leaving the community, those types of things.
And that's also more than just four and five-year-olds. That's probably birth through five, that 4,000 number, right?
You are correct, yes. And we can break those numbers out as well. If you'd like
to
know zero to three.
I want to give you the opportunity to expand upon. This is not just 17 grantees. This is over 100 programs, and it's 4,000 children, and it's federal funds that are important in Alaska. But thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
All right. The committee will move on to trying to slug through the final portions of the sectional analysis. I don't know if we will finish it today. We have about 13 minutes. I would encourage Mr. King to try to get through it. Just to check that box on the sectional analysis, we were at, I believe we're at
29, I think you're at.
And in the sectional analysis itself, page 5, 1437-65G. And, yeah. And so, Mr. King, if you'd like to resume, and we'll see how far we get today on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could make a recommendation, if it's okay with you, it might be appropriate to just finish reading the sectional and saving debate and conversation for a later date.
So and probably for we will probably have another sectional analysis with a committee substitute bill that will show up in the future. But, yes, please begin.
Chairman, if I may.
Senator Baggage.
So I agree with that approach. I just would, if you could comment just in a little more detail on number 30, page 30, the section 1437-70, and the issue of five participating schools each year, because they have to apply each year, and I'd like you to just describe what that process would look like. So, and that way I won't have to ask any other questions since I've already asked all the other ones.
Mr. Chairman, we will be coming to that section shortly, and we can either expand directly or we can come back to it after the end if we have time. It's your call, Mr. Chairman.
I would suggest we go through the sectional analysis and we come back and revisit that.
Mr. Chairman, in Section 33, we are on AS 1430-765G. Section G directs the department to develop a recognition program for improving reading skills. Subsection H establishes a good cause exemption for delaying promotion. And, Mr. Chairman, I understand that we haven't really discussed this retention issue. It's going to be a long conversation that I hope we can have at a later date. It looks like there's two SHs here. So moving to I, subsection I sets forth the process for requesting a good cause exemption. J requires that the parents receive written notification, and Mr. Chairman, I did note the potential amendment on that subsection. If their child did not demonstrate sufficient reading proficiency, they would get such a notification. Subsection K directs the district to provide additional intervention for students that did not promote either or did promote with a good cause waiver or a parental waiver. Subsection L establishes a policy for mid-year promotion. Subsection M requires that a student promoting mid-year continue with the individual reading improvement plan. Subsection N limits retention to 1 year, so a student that was previously retained cannot be retained again. Subsection O provides definition for a reading teacher. And then, Mr. Chairman, 770 was the provision that Senator Baggage just brought forward. It establishes the Department of Reading program, including five reading specialists, which we can return to momentarily. And section or subsection 775 provides definitions throughout the chapter. Section 34 is a future amendment. It changes one word from should to must. That's an important change that we can discuss again in a moment. And the same change is made in 35 in subsection E of 765. Section 36 is a new subsection of law, or is a new section of law, actually, 143800, which establishes a virtual education consortium. Again, that's a good conversation to return to. Section 37 adds the early education program to the definition of an organization within the Department of Health and Social Services definitions for situations relating to children. Section 38 is a repealer provision. This is the sunsets on section 1403410, which is the early education funding, and 420, which is the parents and parents as teachers program, as well as 165, or so that's 1407-165A5, which are the regulations that establish the standards for an early education program. And Mr. Chairman, I did note that that might be something that the committee might not want to sunset. And AS 1417-905D is a prohibition on including early education students with other state or federal funding. That's a repeal of that provision, since that can no longer, the early education programs would no longer exist. That statute would be referring to something that was also repealed. Section 39 is a repealer at a date of June 30th, 2028. I should mention that all of the repeals in Section 38 were on June 30th of 2032. So in Section 39, with the repeal date of 2028, is the reading intervention specialists. Mr. Chairman, the idea there was that the reading intervention specialists would be implemented immediately, and so information about their efficacy would be available sooner, but we understand that it might make more sense to align those sunset dates. Section 40 sets a deadline for the department to execute the setup of the virtual education consortium, which was added in a previous section, section 36. That deadline for setting up that consortium is July 1, 2023, although, Mr. Chairman, I know that the department already is running a learning management system that might qualify, so the time frame, there should be plenty of time for them to establish that. Section 41 is applicability language that was related to teacher certifications, just making sure that teachers that were previously certificated would have time to meet any new standards that were being implemented. Section 42 requires a report from DEED. This is the terminal report before the sunset date, just ensuring that the program has a process for review before the sunset occurs. This is specific to the reading specialists. And Mr. Chairman, I know that in the committee substitute, we've discussed about including all of the programs in that report, making sure that there is a process before the sunset of a program that its efficacy has been demonstrated. Section 43 of the bill, it directs DEED to use the 2019-2020 school year in determining the rankings of districts for the 2022 grants, the fiscal year 22 grants, just because of the COVID complications in the school year that we just finished, or we're about to just finish. Section 44 through 47 are effective date provisions. Section 44 is a effective date for the implementation of the previous sections 7, 24, 25, 26, 34, and 35. That was that change. Section 7 was the change of the kindergarten start date, and sections 24 through 26 were related to the carry forward provisions, and then 34 and 35 were related to fourth grade promotion, the changing should to must. This is the future effective date that Senator Hughes was speaking of previously, that the quote-unquote hard retention doesn't occur until 2026. Section 45's effective date is for June 30th, 2028, which we previously mentioned. Section 46 effective date for sections 13, 22, 28, and 38 are all repealer sunset provisions. On June 30th of 2032. and Section 34 is the effective date for all other sections that don't have a listed effective date taking effect on July 1, 2021. And, Mr. Chairman, I would just point to the handout that the committee has at Senator Michicki's request that is a graphic representation of the sunset provisions. The red just meaning that the law is not in effect, the green meaning the law is in effect, and that yellow bar that might raise interest is just it's to signify the fact that the provision doesn't get repealed, but it does get modified. And, Mr. Chairman, if we have time, we can return to any of those sections or take questions or however you like.
Senator Baggage.
Thank you. Page 30, section of new law, that would be 143770, Department Reading Program, which eventually is repealed. But under this program, the way it's written right now, what would happen would be school districts with low-performing schools would compete against each other each year for this grant program. So there's no surety, and I just think that's perhaps a flaw in the thinking of this process, that what you might want to do is have a single competitive period of time so that there are at least a few years for a program to actually have effect. Otherwise, what it is it's effectively a race to the bottom. So I would encourage you, Mr. Chairman, take a second look at how you actually conduct the program under that section to ensure that it doesn't end up simply being our poorest performing districts fighting it out with each other in some kind of weird Hobbesian way over which one will eventually get the money each given year. It's a single year grant as opposed to the other versions that this is based on, which would say you would compete for the money and then have multiple years, 3 years or whatever the time period might be, to actually get the program up and running with the support that's necessary. This time-limited approach, I think, is the wrong approach. I would just highly recommend you take a look at that, talk it over with the department, determine what the best approach is. But this approach, I think, is bound to fail. And that's what your data and your reports will show. So that's all I wanted to say. That's my only comment for the rest of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Baggage. Senator Hughes?
Yes, just looking at the sectional analysis, just so we get these dates straight, and I know the chart you made is in here, but I'm just looking at Section 44 has to do with a strong promotion policy, correct? Section 45 has to do that repeal date is having to do with reading specialists, and then Section 46 has to do with pre-K.
Mr. Chair, through the Chair, Senator Hughes, that sounds correct.
Okay. And then I have a quick question, Mr. Chair, also, and that is on page 28 of the bill, line 3-5. And I remember working on this in previous versions and previous legislatures. This is for the interim period before the strong promotion policy would kick in. In other words, we want to recognize the teachers and schools and districts that are increasing the percentage of students who are demonstrating proficiency. So does that one have a repeal date then when the strong promotion policy kicks in, or does it stay on forever?
Senator Hughes, through the Chair, there's no repeal of that provision.
Okay. I'm fine with that, but I remember when we developed it, it was trying to encourage schools to get with the program up and running during those first 4 years. Thank you.
With no other questions from the committee, Mr. King, did you have a final comment?
Mr. Chairman, if there's time to address the issue that Senator Baggage raised, I'd love to do it now, or we can return to it later.
I'll have 2 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, if I can take 2 minutes. Just to have an explanation on the record of what the reading specialists are, it's a program. These are five employees of the Department of Education. And the Department of Education would allow those employees, they would basically deploy those to schools that are awarded the grant. That's not a financial grant. It's a grant of an employee, so that it's a member of staff that actually goes to the school and teaches those teachers how to teach reading and helps those students that are struggling how to learn better. It's a teach the teacher type of a program. So the idea here is that those are not permanent employees of the school to which the application is accepted. These are temporary employees that go to teach the teachers how to teach, and then hopefully if they're successful, they would be able to move on to another school and help those teachers.
They would move on to the next.
May I respond?
Senator Baggage.
I'm sorry to to have to say, I mean, I wrote this provision of the bill, mm-hmm. with the exception of the reading program that remains may, it says here, may compete in a, may apply to participate in the reading program again in the following school year. This is lines 24 and 25. What that means is that you are asking these folks to compete for that resource. They'll apply to the Department of Education each year. And what I'm suggesting to you, based on the evidence that we have in the field, because we've been doing something like this in the department, that it requires longer than a year. And I'm simply asking, I'm not asking for a correction on a provision I wrote, Mr. King. I'm asking that it actually be meaningful. And so what I have proposed is a way to make it meaningful by not making it competitive. I respect your correction of, you know, what I said, except that it doesn't address the issue. I never said it was about the money. It's about the provision of the resource. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And, Mr. Chairman, I didn't mean to imply that any member was saying anything incorrectly or to generate any disrespect. And I apologize for any disrespect that might have been taken.
Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you, Senator Begich. We will now set Senate Bill 111 aside and continue taking testimony next week. We are looking for outside of the work day testimony, public testimony options. We're now steering towards a Saturday, probably 10 in the morning after this next weekend. If I'll be in discussions with committee members about who would be available to attend. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting is Wednesday, April 7th at 9 a.m. We're adjourned at 10:33.